We have done this before, but we think actually it's worth saying again, and those of you who didn't do last year won't have known anything about him. But for those of you men who like answers and, you know, solutions, you want to fix it, I'm not looking at anybody in particular, but I know who you are. This will be right up your street. How to fix things and how to get solutions in two easy sessions. And you can go home. Actually, it's quite interesting because there are some, certainly some of the modern therapies, who very much say that it's about, you know, you don't need great long lengths of time. You can all do it in fairly short times. In fact, one guy said he'd cut down the therapeutic hour to 5 minutes. So, there we go. So, yes. That was his ego state. I'm sorry, I'm going to lunch. You can only have 5 minutes, that's all it is. No, I think this is a certainly in the counselling world, Egon's approach is quite a highly well thought of one. He produced his book in, I think it was 1978, something like that, and he's now on to something like the 14th or 15th edition. So he's done quite well, Gerard Egan. He seems to be quite a shy person because there's not a lot about him on the web at all. All we know is he's born in Glasgow and he actually lectures at a Catholic university in Chicago. So, but I think it's quite good because specifically it's talking about problem. It is talking about problem management, how you help people to manage problems better. And what he says is it's not kind of the whole curriculum, but it's a tool, a useful tool to use in which you can help people move on. So he touches on the usual things that we've talked about in terms of the kind of skills, in terms of empathy and genuineness and all those kind of things, but ties it into this kind of fairly simple model. So, skilled helper, that's you and me, although he does say, of course, that there are some unskilled helpers too, so you do have to be kind of... careful, skilled, yes, quite. And he says there are basically two goals. One is to help clients to manage specific problems in living more effectively or developing missed opportunities and unused resources. So it's not specifically about solving problems, it's about helping clients to manage them better. He uses the word client, obviously. It's not a term that we would use, but just bear with it. Helping clients in their general ability to manage problems and develop opportunities in everyday life. So it's about living life more fully and more effectively. Now you may think, where is God in all this? Well, as you'll see in a little bit, he doesn't bring God, Catholic seminary or not, he doesn't actually bring God into his model. But I think I look upon this a bit like... plundering the Egyptians, that actually has some useful things to say, and we just need to learn how to put it within the whole context of our Christian belief and our Christian approach, and the power and working of God and the Holy Spirit in what goes on. So, you know, you may scratch your head, as I say, and think, well, where is God in all this? He's there. Because I think he's behind a lot of thoughts and ideas that people have who aren't Christians. So we just need to find it and make it work for ourselves. And he would say, Egan would say that effective decision making is at the heart of his approach to helping. Fundamentally, it's about a problem management and opportunity development process to help that clients can use to help themselves. He suggests that it's a useful starting off point. It's a principle that underlines all successful counselling. He suggests too it's a practical model of helping, a practical framework with some methods and skills that make it work. Now, this is really just a whistle-stop tour through it. So in other words, it's not good enough to say we had a good session, because what does that mean? It's a bit like, you know, we had, you know, going to church, and what was the meeting like? Was it, you know, we had a good time. Well, in what way was it a good time? Are you different? You know, I don't know. Are you worse? You know, it's that kind of thing. So he would say that having a good session has to translate into something to do with more effective living. So in other words, he wants results. And in essence, of course, that's what we do want. We want results, not simply by any old method, but we want results in God, because that's what we've been talking about, isn't it, all today. We want to see things, people move on. And that's what he's saying, you know, in the model. And it's, you know, I think it's a good thing to say, actually, he's right. We don't just want to say it's, you know, a good session and you know, what does that mean? We want to be able to say, ultimately, why it was a good session and how things have moved on. So the model of choice outline is a flexible, humanistic, and there you go. It's a flexible, humanistic, broadly based problem management and opportunity development model. Now we can kind of, you know, just leave out that humanistic bit, because we could say it's a flexible, God-breathed, broadly based problem management, opportunity development model. It's a good basis for whatever theory you happen to follow. It does actually acknowledge spirituality. But as we know, spirituality gets acknowledged in a number of different ways these days, and it's all a bit airy-fairy, you know. So, but it's there. It's flexible in that actually any stage of the model, when you see it, could be an entry point for the person you're seeing. He would also say that it's not the whole curriculum. It's just a tool that you can use. You know, what's interesting, I think this thing about not, it's about being wise, not smart. I think that's actually a very good approach for all of us to have as Christians. Because we know that actually the Bible really doesn't give too much credence to being smart. Sometimes, of course, it does talk about not many of you were wise, not many of you were, you know, whatever. So it is about the working and power of the Holy Spirit within us. But I believe God does make us wise. So one of the prayers I've prayed over a number of years is, God, make me wise in this situation. And I just think that's a great thing for us to pray. You know, we need to have a working knowledge and skills. Working knowledge, if you like, is a kind of a translation of theory and research into an applied understanding. In other words, you get understandings of the theory behind what you do, and you apply it into the helping that you do. It's as simple as that. That's what a working knowledge is. So the understanding that helps you and I to work with people who come to us for help. And skills, of course, are the actual ability to deliver what we're doing in an effective way. Now, the thing is with this model, this doesn't come out well in your notes, I know. So he divides it into three stages. Stage one means what's going on. Stage two means what solutions make sense for me. Stage three is how do I get what I need or want. And within those three stages, he has different steps. Now, the arrows there are just to show that actually there's a lot of, you know, to-ing and fro-ing. That it's not quite as step one, step two, step three. There's kind of sometimes you go backwards and forwards in this. A bit like we've been saying, like Christine was saying, and the kind of models of grief and mourning, kind of backwards and forwards. So he would acknowledge that. He would also say that often steps are kind of jumbled and intermingled when you're dealing with real-life problems and managing them. that actually sometimes this whole thing can be derailed by what he calls an overspill of uncontrolled emotions. That maybe the cost of managing is too high for people. And that decision-making in difficult situations is seldom quite as rational as this process may suggest. So he acknowledges that, but nevertheless thinks it's a helpful model to have in your mind because it gives you a kind of framework that you can work with. So it's about turning decisions into solution-focused actions. That's really what it's about. He says the arbiter is common sense and social intelligence. You know, do what is best for the client. I don't think that's actually strictly true. I know why he says it. Ultimately, it's about God and what's best for God. Stop and think about that one. But it is. Now, I'm not saying it's not about what's best for you and I, because God has what's best for you and I at his heart. Doesn't he? But of course, sometimes what's best for you and I, we don't always see it that way, do we? Seeing things from God's perspective, you know, that's important. So stage one is about clarification and ownership. Stage two is about goal setting and commitment. And stage three is about strategies for how you accomplish those goals. So if you're fairly kind of, you know, if you're an engineer by background, this is the kind of thing you love because it kind of takes you in steps forward. If you're like me and you're more empathetic and you're more loving and kind and you're more a bit more wishy-washy and you love just, you know, if you're asked to draw your feelings, you can do it and, you know, yes. Excuse me, I have been known to draw my feelings if I've been asked at certain sessions. I've learned to behave myself. So. True, okay, maybe not ever wishy-washy, but anyway. So, let's have a look. Stage one, what's going on? Helping people tell their stories. This is about stress reduction. I feel better already. That's why you only need 5 minutes, you see.
Got rid of the problem.
Got rid of the, yes. Well, certainly got rid of the person who's trying to help you. So... I love them. So, stress reduction, clarity, relationship building, action. There's nothing new. You know, these are the kind of things we've been looking at, aren't they? So, the kind of skills you need at this stage are to do with active listening, respect, genuineness, empathy. Those are the kind of basic common or garden, everyday helper skills. That's what you need. It's about being present, isn't it, for people? That's how, you know, it's about trying to find out what's the key message, what are the key feelings for this person. It's about helping that person to get them out. This is about the client's point of view. What are their feelings and emotions about what's going on? Clarity, you know, it's about spelling out. Don't be vague. You know, don't allow people to be vague. Get them to actually spell out what it is that they're trying to deal with and what's going on. You know, it's about being specific. Being specific about their experiences, being specific about their emotions, being specific about their behavior, those kind of things. So using your common skills to build the relationship. Again, this is something which we've touched on. We know it's important. It's re-emphasizing it again. You won't get people to be totally honest and open if you don't build a relationship. But I want to tell you, it is possible to build relationships even with the most difficult person. My wife knows that really well. Excuse me. No, and so action. Action is about acting on what you're learning. So it's not just the passive things. Now, sometimes for some people, actually, stage one, telling their story is all they need. It may be, actually, in all seriousness, they need one session. You know, they express what's going on, they talk about it, and they kind of see, actually, that's really helpful. that's helped me to see, I feel I can manage this, you know, and off they go. And that's okay. Now within that first stage, people often have what we call blind spots. These are mindsets, dysfunctional ways of thinking and acting, and discrepancies. Now mindsets, these are assumptions, attitudes, beliefs, biases, norms, things that we just all have. They drive our external behavior. So you may feel, for example, that people who live in Hove look down on people who live in Brighton. That might be a mindset that you have. I'm not commenting on it one way or another. I'm just saying it's an example of a mindset, both positive and negative. Dysfunctional ways of thinking and acting. Clients, you know, people who come for help don't often see how they are affected by thinking of things a certain way, which may not be the actual truth of the situation. Discrepancies, the difference between what they say and what they do. And often, you know, when you're as an outside person, that's easy to see, isn't it? And what we're having to do here, I guess, is use skills of challenging, empathy, encouragement, sometimes immediacy, what's going on in the here and now of, you know, the session. That's what immediacy is about. You know, you talk about being bored, you know, your friends find you boring, and actually I find you boring too. So, you know, let's talk about that. Or words to that effect. You may say it slightly differently than that, but that's an example of immediacy. So, and sometimes, you see, people have blind spots to actually what the potential may be in a situation. So you're wanting to move them on, blind spots to new perspectives. So, you know, mindsets can be prejudices. They can be self-limiting beliefs about yourself. This is sometimes something about the tyranny of the past, he talks about. Something we believe about ourselves that still controls us today. One of the great quotes that he has is that we shouldn't allow, let me get this right, we mustn't allow our experiences to be limiting. Liabilities, that's it. We mustn't allow our experiences to be liabilities. I think that's really true. You need to think about that one, but actually, you know, don't allow our experiences to become liabilities in how we are today. So, challenging is about inviting somebody to see something a different way. It's not saying you do this or I'll punch you in the nose kind of thing. It's about, have you thought about? Do you think there might be, maybe there's another way of looking at that. What do you think? That's what challenging is about. It's encouraging people to see things in a different way. So that's just acknowledging that sometimes when we're hearing stories and whatever, people can have blind spots. Third part of this first stage is what he calls leverage. This is a bit like, you know, when you can't get the tin off the coffee jar, they're in jars, aren't they, these days? Okay, so you can't get the top of the tin open, so you get a spoon and you lever it up. That's what leverage is all about. So it's about how do we get the most out of this session? What is it I want to work on? I'm working on issues that make a difference. That's the questions. Is the client really ready to invest in change? There are certain principles to leverage. If there's a crisis in their particular situation, help them manage the crisis. That may seem obvious, but if you don't do that, they won't be able to look at any underlying issues and whatever. So help them to manage the crisis. What problem or what part of the problem may be causing the most pain? Thirdly, begin with an issue that they see as important. They may come up like Fred. You see, Fred last time had five things that he actually was dealing with. But you have to know what was the most important thing that he would want to work on. Sometimes it's not a bad thing to see if there's a kind of like what you could call a sub-problem. In other words, a problem, if it was handled, would lead to a general improvement fairly quickly. So that's okay, because that gives people encouragement. No, it's the client. Yes. Yeah, it's the client. It's about getting a handle on something. So working on issues that make a difference to them. It may not be, you know, you may think there's this huge, great problem, but actually to get things going, there's this part of the problem that will make a difference to them fairly quickly and whatever. It's okay to work on that. You don't have to find the underlying problem straight away. It may be glaringly obvious, it may not be. But this is part of the engaging thing, you see. It's the same kind of skills, the skills of summarizing and clarifying that we've talked about and that we've looked at on our Monday nights. So those are the skills you'd be using. So, stage two, what solutions make sense? Possibilities. Sense of direction, thinking about possibilities, thinking outside the box, brainstorming. If you like, this is the creativity bit. What would a better future look like? Let's explore that. Where do I want to get to? What would this look like? That's what you do when you get people to think outside the box, to brainstorm. It's what he calls divergent thinking. In other words, if you have, is it convergent thinking? You just think of one solution. If you have divergent thinking, you're thinking there's maybe this, or there could be that, or there could be the other. And that's what brainstorming does. It helps you to kind of look at all the kind of possible. It doesn't matter whether it's kind of, you know, one that is going to work or not. In some senses, you're getting them to brainstorm about what would it look like? What might you be able to do? What would you know? It's just the kind of encouragement to people. So these are tools, if you like, for divergent thinking, thinking about different possibilities. And thinking of solution in terms of goals. Because what this does is this encourages hope and it stimulates optimism in people. So the skills here, again, are about probing and making your probes future orientated. What would that look like? What do you think that might look like? If you did this, what do you think the result might be? Exploring. Now, at the same time, you're trying to find out solutions in the end that make sense. And this is like the innovation part. Choices, goals, outcomes, not just activities, difference. Goals that make a difference. Goals that have an impact. It's moving from the possibles to choices. It's becoming more specific. A goal, if you like, is a specific statement of outcome that provides direction. A goal is a specific statement of outcome that provides direction, because that's what you want. You want a goal that actually has an outcome. In a sense, what you want them to do is to take a possibility and to turn it into an agenda for change. Still in stage two, the last part of stage two is, you know, what's all the, or I guess it's kind of interwoven with the other two, about what solutions make sense. This is about commitment. This is about helping people to take ownership. It's about helping them to weigh up the cost. You know, what should I pursue? Is it worth it? Do I have a belief in myself? It's a dimension of the goal-setting process. We talk a lot about the people themselves have to own what's going on. You and I can see, you and I can think we see, we know what the answer is. But if they don't own it, they may say yes, yes on the on the time you're seeing them, and a week later things are no different. And it's partly because they haven't owned it. So, you know, I think it's very important. This is a dialogue that's going on. So it isn't that we say nothing. So it's not all simply down to them to come up with everything. It's not like that. But it is important that it's not your agenda. Hopefully it's God's agenda. Yep. Yes, you can't jolly people out of depression. That's true, in that kind of way. I think even with people who are, yeah, it would depend on the level of depression, I guess. But sometimes just staying with people, it's like, a bit like Christine was talking this morning, I think is very key. In those kind of situations. And I have had some people who, yeah, could at least grasp, even if they didn't quite have hope. I mean, this is an interesting one, because sometimes I do say to people, even if you don't have hope, actually I have some hope for you. And I think that there's a sense in which they can, you know, even their worst moment, hang on to that. Yep. And hopefully it does move from there. So... but, you know, sometimes you have to know that people are, you know, do want to invest in change, as I said. It may seem a funny thing to say, but actually, do you want to? Quite often, when, you know, particularly with couples, married couples who come to us, I say, well, actually, what do you want? It may seem obvious, you know, but I never assume I know what they want. Sometimes I have been surprised because somebody may say, well, actually, I want out of this relationship. It's gone very quiet. Skills of support and encouragement. Stage three is about how do I get what I need? What might the strategies be? It's about identifying and choosing realistic courses of action. About further brainstorming. It's about what support do I need? So you might say if somebody has an alcohol problem, it may be there are kind of a list of things that they might be able to do. They might be able to go to a rehabilitation place. They might be able to have help from their GP. They might be able to have medication that makes them sick if they take a drink. So there's a kind of a whole list of possibilities that there may be around. So what you're doing is helping them decide on what's a realistic course of action for them. So they may say, well, actually, I really can't go on a rehabilitation centre because I'm a single parent and there's nobody to look after my children. So you have to kind of, you know, you may rule that out. I'm just giving you examples of how you might use it in that kind of way. So, but you're still about what kind of actions produce outcomes. And it may be, what do I need to do first? I maybe have all these things, but actually, what do I need to do first? And within this, you know, what support do I need? Well, this is why we do what we do in a community setting. So hopefully these are people who are in small group. Now, that's not to say they have to kind of spill their guts all and you know, share every single thing about themselves to their small group, but it's about saying, okay, what kind of support might you need from the small group in this situation? And how do we handle that? You know, what makes, you know, what will help you? In some senses, the skills that are very similar to it, we're still using probing, challenging, prompting, those kind of things. So how do I get what I need the best fit? What options best fit the person? Selecting strategies are realistic, sustainable, robust, etc. Strategies are the how. They drive behavior. Sometimes he suggests you might want to draw up a balance sheet for people. So they decide, you know, if I do this, or weigh up, you know, what the consequences would be, that kind of thing. So what is the best fit for them? Finally, how do I get what I want? A plan. Yes. For those of you who like plans, and I know what I'm doing now. That helping with steps encourages discipline, evaluation, and revising, keeps things manageable. People do need things that actually help them to not to feel overwhelmed. So in some senses, for some people, something fairly concrete actually helps them. It's something to lay hold of. And I think developing discipline is actually important. Because in essence, we're wanting people to learn how to better handle the things that come their way in life themselves. That's what the aim. They may be dealing with one thing, but actually what you're hoping is that that same skill will actually help them with when another problem comes up or another situation comes up or whatever it happens to be. You're wanting to help them to that. That's what that's his very starting off point, helping people to better manage their lives. And just about, this is about the skills there about being supportive and reality testing. Is it going to work? So the action arrow, which is at the bottom of the thing, this is really about helping people with tactics, about adopting a plan for the immediate situation, helping people to achieve their goals. So you might want to develop a contingency plan. You know, if I try this and that doesn't work, what would I do? So somebody might say, actually, what I want to do is to do this college course. But they go away and they find, well, actually, that college course is too expensive, but they can't do that. But they find if they go to this college course, that's less expensive and they can afford it. So it's like a contingency plan. It's action-focused. It's about the implementation. It's about overcoming procrastination. People do procrastinate, strange though it may seem. And I was talking, there was a young man that we were helping fairly recently who said, yes, now he wanted to get back in his relationship with God. So we decided that things he could do, he could spend time with God, he could, start going back to small group, etc. So next week, have you been to small group? Well, no, because, I don't know. How about time with God? Well, I managed to do one, but I got distracted by my flatmate on the second day. So, sometimes you just have to kind of continue to challenge people to deal with that procrastination. Here's your plan. If you're really serious, you've got to stay with it and work with it. So here it is in a simplified form. Stage one, what's going on, having to tell the story. So this is the current picture. Stage two, what solution makes sense to me, helping to determine outcomes. That's the preferred picture. Where do I need or want to get to? And stage three, how do I get there? Identifying action, strategies, and plans. This is the way forward. What action or plan makes sense? And that's it in a nutshell.